Goodnight Irene, stories and photos about the tropical storm that devastated Vermont, the Catskills, and the Berkshires is a new book published by Surrey Cottage Books and written by Craig Brandon, Nicole Garman, and Michael Ryan. The book is full of stories about resilient neighbors helping each other through the time of extreme difficulty following Tropical Storm Irene's devastation of our region. Here to tell us more about the book and the recovery, which in many cases is still ongoing, are Craig Brandon, Michael Ryan, and Sarah Goodrich. Sarah is the executive director of SALT, Schoharie Area Long Term, the group that is working with the people of Schoharie to recover from Irene. Sarah, Craig, Michael, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So how did this project come to be, Craig?
Well, I live in southwest New Hampshire, and I read the newspaper articles about all this damage. And since I'm a book publisher and I do regional books, that I thought there was an interesting story to be told here. But I didn't think that I could do it all myself or that one person could do it. So I looked around for freelance writers to do it in different areas. And between the three of us, we went to three states, covered 12 towns, and gathered photographs and put this entire story together.
And it's a tragic story, but it's fascinating because to see the randomness of the storm, Michael, and also how some communities were devastated, others were a near miss, and but ultimately how so many people came together to work it out.
Well, that's the beauty of the storm, if you can call the storm beautiful in a certain way. And there's some stories in the book that where people survived sitting on their roofs, and they have a totally different reaction to it. But yeah, the storm could affect a house next door to another house, not just a community next to a community. It was weird, but I guess streams are like that. They go where they're going to go.
Right.
You know.
It is. I remember when, as it was happening, as the storm, just the immediate aftermath of the storm, going down in Troy to the Hudson River, and just watching the incredible power of the river coming down and seeing mobile homes and cars and parts of porches and just flowing down the river at just an amazing clip, and there is a helplessness. Isn't there, Sarah?
Absolutely.
Just like looking at what's happening and realizing that there's really nothing at that moment you can do about it.
Right, and that's part of the trauma that people experienced. And part of that also was the fact that people had no real expectation that it was going to be so bad. In many areas, they'd never flooded before. I mean, we're talking historic homes that had been there 200 years and had never flooded in all that history. And this time had 6-8 feet of water in their first floor, which means, of course, your whole infrastructure in the cellar is lost first. Mm. And, that was part of the shock when they returned home eventually to find that it wasn't just a ho-hum, little water in the cellar event. They lost everything.
In generic speak, we in the Northeast are not wired for tropical storms.
Absolutely not, no.
And not ready for what that means. Craig, one of the things that's fascinating about the book, and we talk about the geography of the storm, but whether it is Rochester, Vermont, or Williamstown, Massachusetts, or Schoharie, New York, there are these towns that are so profoundly impacted, and it obviously it has to do with their proximity to streams and rivers and creeks. But it is, you wouldn't think of Weston, Vermont, which is halfway up a mountain, to be as affected as it was.
Well, climate specialists told me that the storm, in a normal rainfall, the rain falls and spreads out in all directions. But what happens when you have this record-breaking rainstorm, and it was basically a month's worth of rain that fell in just a few hours, that it's like a peaked roof where it rolls down the sides of the roof and then into the gutters and into the downspouts. And those streams in the area, some of them were tiny little streams that people didn't even recognize or notice, suddenly became these raging torrents with the water rushing down and flash flooding communities that were not prepared, as was stated before. So You had people's houses. People in Massachusetts said that their houses, the first time they knew something was wrong, was in the night when their house started to move, where the water, the stream nearby, was pushing against the foundation and making it move. Other people had some warning. And I think the early warning people, the firemen and the policemen, deserve a lot of credit for why so few people died, because they went around and got people out, which, you know, is not an easy thing to do, to get people to leave their houses. But if it wasn't for that, I think we would have had a huge death toll from people. In the trailer parks, for instance, if you look at trailer parks that were just devastated, crushed like tin cans, the warning that they did get, the small warning, was what saved a lot of those people's lives.
Michael, you write for the Windham Journal. And we're covering the storm. And were you personally affected?
I was not. I had a girlfriend who was stuck in the flood in Windham. That's one area we cover, obviously, Windham Journal. So I was involved in the storm because I went up to get her out and didn't have time. By the time I got there, it was too late. As far you, if you don't mind me going backtracking a little
not
bit,
at all.
You mentioned helpless.
Yeah.
There's a story in the book about a guy who was trained in water rescue, and a trailer got yanked off its foundation right next to his house, and he had to stand there and watch his neighbor drown in the storm. So you mentioned helpless, and then there, in Prattsville, the interesting geographic about Prattsville is the streams that went through Windham and Lexington and Jewett and all these little towns, they all converged in Prattsville. Mm-hmm. So people wonder why Prattsville's on the cover of the book and why Prattsville seems to get a lot of press. Well, if you drove through Main Street the day after the storm, you would understand. It's just, yes, there's houses out in the outer areas that were, you know, ruined and a lot of, but when you drive through Main Street in Prattsville, it was unbelievable. The trailers you mentioned, there were 16 trailers dragged by the stream. I'd say maybe 500 yards, and they were smashed into an area
yeah.
of about less than a football field. And, I mean, it was just crushed by the power of this water.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of things that happened as far as the power of the water goes and the helplessness. But the five streams in Prattsville, really, they had no chance.
Well, I think that's one of the things that came to my mind as I was watching all of this stuff go down the river was, well, it's going to end somewhere. And that's the scary part as well. And the fury of which and that was just the Hudson. Not
and
to
it went to Sarah's neck of the woods after
right.
passed us. So
right.
Not that Prattsville's crying, but, you know.
Well, you know, and it's not a competition. I mean, anybody
right.
who's affected by this, it's really a horrible thing. And one of the things, Sarah, that I think that the book illustrates so beautifully is how you know, it leaves the headlines, but my God, this takes a long time to recover. This is not something that we look at back a year later, but we're not out of this.
No, we're not. Early on, we learned to say this is a marathon, not a sprint. But even as we were saying that in the beginning, I don't think we really knew what that was going to mean, thinking months instead of days or weeks, perhaps. But of course, it's really going to be years. Right now, we look at the area and say there's about 15 to 20% of people that are back in and okay, completed. Maybe not 100%, but certainly, you know, very secure. And there's probably 20% on the other end of the scale that haven't been able to do anything yet for a variety of reasons. And then we have the 60% of other people in the middle that are someplace along that line. So there are many, many people still needing a lot of help, a lot of assistance, and a long way to go. In fact, we're going to use that for our next year's motto, so to speak, is a way to go. You know, we have a way to go yet. We've come a long way. Way to go, everybody. But we have a way to go.
The name of the book is Good Night, Irene, Stories and Photos About the Tropical Storm That Devastated Vermont, the Catskills, and the Berkshires. We will continue our conversation with Craig Brandon, Michael Ryan, and Sarah Goodrich after this short break. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Craig Brandon, Michael Ryan, and Sarah Goodrich, our guests this morning. We're talking about the new book, Goodnight Irene, Stories and Photos About the Tropical Storm That Devastated Vermont, Catskills, and the Berkshires, published by Surrey Cottage Books. Of course, the storm taking place on August 28th, 2011, so almost 1 year ago. And Michael, do you think that, are there lessons to be learned? I mean, it's such a random thing, and it seems like it's a, you know, we pray to God that it's a once in a lifetime thing, but do we learn in a process like this?
Well, in Prattsville, they're learning if you build high, that's for sure. And Bill Lonicky, whose house got washed away in Windham, was talking one night, and he said, well, this is the fifth 100-year storm I've been through. How do I look? I don't look too bad for being 500 years old. So I don't know. Craig has some interesting statistics about how there's worse and worse floods and hurricanes in the 21st century. I don't want to steal his thunder, but what you learn in Prattsville, I guess, is, like you say, build high. And now they're having festivals in Prattsville, Windham, all through Vermont, to sort of rekindle that spirit that emerged in the aftermath of the flood, because it really was one of those things where everyone, they say you come together, but they really did. And if that spirit could linger longer, I think that would be the great lesson.
Mm. Now, Craig, as far as the statistics go, we always hear about that 100-year flood, but okay, enough already.
Well, the National Hurricane Center rates Irene as number 7 on the list of all-time costliest hurricanes at $15.8 billion. That's billion with a B. And affected a lot of states. But what if you look at that list of the top 10 most damaging hurricanes, which goes back to 1492, so we're talking about 500 years there, is that 7 of the top 10 occurred since the year 2000. So there's no doubt that we're getting more deadly storms, that these are occurring more often, and I think it's just a matter of time before it happens again. It's just not if, but when.
I want to go back, Michael, to something that you mentioned about Prattsville and the cover of the book. There are photographs in the book at the end. They're great images, fascinating images that capture so many of the horrific moments of the storm. But there's this three-story Victorian home. You have a before. Before sort of middle and after photo, the after photo being on the front cover of the book. This is a three-story Victorian house in Prattsville, and there's a Google Maps image of how it looked. It's a Victorian white picket fence, and then it's just a few days later is sunk into the earth and then was eventually...
Sure. Yeah, it became an international icon for the storm. Interestingly,
front page of the New York Times, right?
New York Times, and you know, overseas it showed up.
Yeah.
A sunflower apparently drifted from some stream from some town, seeds, and it grew in the lot where the house was taken out. It's just an empty lot now. And in our paper, not to advertise our paper, but the Windham Journal, we have some photographs that haven't been seen before of the stream in the Schoharie Creek during the storm, because people, you know, they didn't have time to take pictures. But it's, I don't know how you can't describe it unless you go through it. But the spirit on all those little towns, and I'm sure in Vermont and Schoharie and Middleburg, is rising as the anniversary approaches. And they're having, like I mentioned, Mudfest in Prattsville and all over the place. But it's the little sunflower at the lot where the Reichard house and is sort of symbolic.
I was also fascinated by how there were painters who were in their homes watching this and weren't taking pictures, but were obviously influenced and were painting images from the storm. And they're some of the most dramatic in the book.
Well, there's no doubt that it had a great impact on the arts community. There are two stories in particular. There was a painter in Wilmington, Vermont, whose whole studio, she had just rebuilt her studio, spent a quarter of $1 million building it, and the storm came, and not only did it destroy that studio, it actually, the water picked it up off on its concrete slab, floated it down the stream until it hit a telephone pole and fell apart. And the same, further down the same Deerfield River, In Shelburne Falls, there was a quilter who owned a pink house, and exactly the same thing happened. The house was actually picked up by the water and floated across the street where it fell apart. But there, in Vermont in particular, there are all kinds of arts organizations that are commemorating this. In Brattleboro, for instance, the Whetstone Brook was the culprit, and there's Whetstone organizations where they're actually using streams, stones from the stream of the Whetstone to build art out of to memorialize the people who were damaged by the storm.
I want to talk to Sarah a moment. Sarah Goodrich, as I mentioned, is the executive director of Schoharie Area Long Term, known as SALT, in Schoharie, and you can find them online at saltrecovery.org. So you mentioned a moment ago about your motto and going on. But right now, your work is concentrated on what?
Recovery,
still,
in a nutshell, absolutely.
Does that basically mean money, of still getting money?
We desperately need money. That's a big part of it. We look at, our goal is to raise about $3 million. And we look at the dollars of damage in the Schoharie Creek Basin, and are looking at a minimum of $85 million of a gap between what people have received from various resources, be it insurance, their own savings, FEMA, whatever, and the cost that it's going to take to rebuild. And that's rebuilding. Now, if you also throw in the cost of putting people back in their homes completely, which includes furnishings, appliances, and so forth,
Right. Then
you're well over $100 million. So even our $3 million seems small. However, we have a lot of ways that we stretch those dollars and multiply them. And so if we can, reach our goal of $3 million, we'll be able to make a big difference with so many families.
I always try not to do this, but I'm going to do it, which is in the last 2 minutes of an interview, throw out a huge question. That's probably the most difficult to answer, and see what we can do in 2 minutes with it. But after Hurricane Katrina, we all obviously became very sensitive to response and recovery. I'd like to start with Michael and go around the table. But what is the sense that you get from the people that you talk to and of the communities of the level of response, both from the government and other sources of this storm?
Well, there's been a lot of politicians in town. They've been present. People have been very receptive. That they're trying to help. But I don't think people in individual towns understand how vast this storm was, so they're kind of impatient, they're frustrated. But in general, I'd say FEMA is out there working hard. I mean, from where I stand, they're having a lot of people who need a lot of money.
Sarah?
I would agree there have been a lot of response coming. When the need is so vast, it's hard to say that any of it is enough. And for each individual person, until they are completely recovered, it's never enough.
Right.
However, the spirit of recovery remains strong, and people are determined. In fact, we've seen that grow.
Craig?
Well, I think we've talked a lot about the physical damage, but there's also an emotional toll involved in this. There are still people who watched their house disappear, lost their pets, lost their belongings. And those people are seeking help, but it's going to be a long time after their houses are replaced that those people are going to take before they're actually back to anything resembling so-called normal.
Good night, Irene. Stories and photos about the tropical storm that devastated Vermont, the Catskills, and the Berkshires is published by Surrey Cottage Books. You can find out more about the book by going to surreycottagebooks.com. That's S-U-R-R-Y, surreycottagebooks.com. It's available in pretty much every independent bookstore that I have seen in the region, so it's out there. But again, surreycottagebooks.com for more information. You can also learn more about Schoharie Area long-term. Visit saltrecovery.org, saltrecovery.org. Craig Brandon, Michael Ryan, and Sarah Goodrich, I can't thank you enough for all your good work and for being with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.